Welcome to Sounding Board Parenting, where we are creating healthier human connections through the commonality of parenting, exploring the world of parenting with high-performing mums and dads from a range of backgrounds, industries, and family dynamics. This week's guest is Cameron Schwab, who is a father to Chrissy and Evie, husband to Cecily, former CEO of two AFL clubs, an artist, and is also helping to shape future leaders through his company, Design CEO. Let's jump in.
With that, could you take me back and take me through the story behind the moment you found out you were going to be a dad?
Yeah, because I've had, because I then, because I've got a stepdaughter as well. So it was a little bit different, from that perspective. But it was, I think that even in looking at it now and your reflections is that you go into parenting on the basis that you somehow know what you're going to get and how you're going to feel. And it was different at both levels, So I probably had a predetermined view of it, which ended up being something so different to what I thought it was going to be. And with Evie is that, predetermined view might have been that, oh, wow, I've now got a little boy. My little boy will then do and have interests in things that I was interested in myself. And it didn't emerge that way. So we had to find our own way. And in finding our own way, that just opened up my world in a way that that was just wonderful and beautiful and unexpected. And then my little boy comes to me at 16 years of age and tells me that he's changing gender, so it took this, how do you ever predict that type of thing? And I know this, I can recall vividly the moment of putting the baby into the car and all of a sudden the baby's away from the, almost the invisibility of the womb, there's a little kid in there somewhere. And then the safety of the hospital and its nurses and its people basically teaching you how to look after this infant. And then all of a sudden you're putting it in the back of your car and you're driving over the speed humps at about 3 kilometres an hour, just this sort of preciousness. And I think that as you're rolling over those speed humps, the enormity of parenting then hits you. And I don't think it's reality strikes you until really that time, and then the journey's going to take you wherever the journey's going to go, and that's watching their own personalities evolve and your own challenges and your own difficulties. And I actually ended up separating from Lachlan's mum, when he was only a child, and so there was all that complexity as well. So we had, for all of the challenges within it all, it was probably the pure love of the child, if you like, which even holds that part of your life together.
It's life-changing, isn't it?
No doubt. Oh, it's going to change your life like nothing else, really. And I think we all have choices. We have choices as to how much of the role you're going to play in regard to that. And also there are times when you realise that it's going to take its own course anyway, when you first get the door slammed in your face, when you go from the most I love your dad to I hate your dad, during puberty, and you realize in your own way it's the kids actually just finding their own independence. And really, if our role is anything as parents, it's actually to help them find their independence, it's help them to find their self-responsibility and give them the tools to do that, but they're going to have to develop most of those tools on their own anyway. So my line with my kids is often, when they're closing us out as part of that process, particularly when they were younger, was make yourself easier to parent. Don't close us out. We you'll need our help, and we can only help you if we know what's going on for you. But at the same time, you realise that being lost in their own thoughts and trying to struggle their way through their own situations is such an important part of their growing up anyway.
It's all a learning curve, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I think you've touched on a few there. I'm interested if you could expand on what comes to mind in terms of challenges you faced as a parent.
I think probably that the fundamental of most things, when you realise at different times that you're going to be out of your depth, that you're going to face into, you know, very ambiguous situations at different times where you're not sure what you're doing is best for them. Even as basic as what school they go to, you know, do you allow them to go to that party or not? Do you pick them up from school every day, or you let them find their own way home? You know, there are all these things that will continue to go through. You know, and I had a role where, you know, there was pretty high expectations against that. You know, so what part of my parenting am I giving up to be the CEO of an AFL club? You know, and what part of my CEO of an AFL club am I giving up to be a parent? You know, it's all that. And so one thing I worked out really early was that the notion of balance is just a nonsense. You know, everyone's striving for this thing called life balance, where there's always going to be a tension, because you're always going to want the best for your kids. You're going to want the best for, you know, the organisation, which is paying your wages, and you're going to want the best from, you know, your relationships, you know, with your partners, and all these, and those things are going to come into conflict at different times, and often the three things are coming into conflict at the same time, you know. So I found that probably just accepting that this was going to be quite ambiguous at different times was personally a great learning experience, but also I think in some ways hopefully helped with my kids, in that I never dictated to them. I would often ask them what their own thoughts were, or what they, you know, you take your own choices. If I significantly disagreed with the way that they were heading, well, I'd certainly tell them that. But I would, you know, there was never a command and control parenting, because I realised that was not good for them and it was a waste of time anyway. And even with Chrissy, because she came into my life when she's now 34, so she was 13 or 14, around that age. Well, that was, you know, just a really interesting time in her life to have all of a sudden a significant, you know, male figure to be playing a part in her life, and so how we build that relationship. And we've been very fortunate, and we've been able to build a really strong, you know, parental relationship, but, you know, perhaps different to what, you know, would have been if she was there if I was there as part of her life from the very start.
Yeah, I'm interested to now dive into your biggest parenting joys that come to mind.
I think I always say to people, you seem most relieved when your kids are asleep. I think, you know, there's a certain feeling, even as they get older, of knowing that they're safe in their own beds. You know, I remember even thinking that with when they were really, really young. And then when you see them finding their own joy, I think is probably, you know, is the moment where you go, yeah, this stuff's worthwhile. You know, when you see them, and it might have been when they were very young, when they were just in a, when you saw them really focused on something, like might have been Evie when she was drawing, you know, it might have been, you know, I remember when Chrissy was doing year 12 that we were far more stressed about it than what she was, you know, and I thought, well, perhaps that means that we've played a bit of a role, you know, we've actually helped her with that, and she did well, and that became a platform for other things. So I think the joy is in them finding their own joy and their own way of getting through and their own way of managing them, and watching your kids bounce back when they're, you know, from really severe disappointments, because that's just the natural part of life. When you see that they can actually function well the next day and the day after and the day after, even though, you know, something's really hurt them or really affected them in a deep way, but they've managed to get through and they've found a way of getting through. I think they're probably the moments where, you know, I'd, you know, where you reflect on them, or I talk to my wife Cecily about them, just say, look, I think I think they're making sense of this thing. I think they're finding their own way, and that's the most joy that I've got from it.
I love that, like, and totally agree. So my son Oscar is 2 years old, and something that comes to mind straight away is both myself and his mum Jess, we both work full time, so he's in daycare a few days a week, and that smile that you see on his face when you pick them up is something that just has this powerful, profound, I suppose, effect on you. And it just seems to melt away whatever has taken place throughout that day. And it's one of those, I don't know, I call it one of those present triggers. It just pulls you in straight away and nothing else matters. But then on the flip side of that, what you were talking about, being able to see them regulate or self-regulate and cope with different scenarios, whether they're 2 years old or 20 years old, I imagine, would be quite, I suppose, full of pride as well for a parent.
Yeah, no, it is. It's a, that sense of pure joy. And it expresses itself in different ways. I think, you know, when they're even really little and they start to recognize you for the first time, you know, that sense of joy. You know, when you see them build meaningful relationships around themselves and they're with their own little friendship groups as they evolve. And but sometimes it's even in their quiet moments, you know, when they're just playing on their own, you know, where you know that they're actually working out for themselves what they like, you know, what they like doing. And they work out ways of actually doing it. And they work out there's a better way of doing it, and their own little pieces of ambition start to roll out. And even those times when they get frustrated that they can't do it quick enough, or, and there's been a few temper tantrums in the Schwab household at different times when kids have worked out that they, that whatever they're trying to do is hard, and they're going to have to find a way of actually doing it. And then in working out that way, that they're not taking easy options, they're just digging in and digging in and digging in, and they're building that little bit of grit and resilience that you know. And it's funny because even as because you get to see, I now get to see an adult expression of all those things that you saw in them as children, and in their own way, their expressions are exactly the same. It might be the way they turn their lip up, or they look at you sideways, or they brood over an issue, or you have a little bit of conflict over something, and the way they respond to that conflict, it's not that much different to when they were little kids. And so there's part of them which is, it's just in their DNA. It's the nature nurture thing that how much influence we're actually going to have on them is you're never quite sure, you know, because whatever's in them when you're looking at little Oscar now at 2 years of age, the pattern's already set, you know, that they're going to be a certain thing at 22 years of age, but you get to just influence it in the little subtle ways that you do. But in the end, they're going to have to find their own way, as you and I had to. So you're sitting on that cusp of how much I can control it and how much should I control it. I hope they work it out for themselves anyway. It's that really interesting little mix of everything.
Totally. There seems to be such a strong link around the environment, and probably more importantly, the attachment types that children form between those early ages of 0 to 5. I'm actually just finishing off a book called Laws of Human Nature by Robert Greene. And he details in the book, without quoting it, 4 attachment types that are formed in those ages. And exactly what you just mentioned in terms of the effects of those attachment types are most prominently seen in the ages through their 20s and their 30s, and mainly to do with coping with stress and being able to self-regulate. So there's insecure, there's secure, there's insecure ambivalent, and then disorganized. I think that's how they go. And simply what you were saying there's such a correlation between them reacting to a toy being taken off them at 3 to possibly being knocked back from a job or being fired from a job at 25, and how they react to that. like you said, is obviously different in some ways, but it's also very similar too. It's really interesting, that whole space, I think.
Yeah. And I've had that said of me at different times, that yeah, my mum will say, "Oh, mate, you did that when you were five," you know, and she's talking to a 50-year-old version of that, you know. So it's still there, and even in, because my parents were very young when they had kids. My mum was only 16 when she had my sister. So my parents never were. Yeah, it was almost a little. They were clearly my parents, but it was almost closer to an older sibling as much as anything at different times, you know. So even we had that dynamic a little bit in our life as well. So it's an interesting way we grow up.
It's a good segue. So heading into that, what type of parenting did you experience as a child that you can recall?
My mum was quite strict. I think she had, and she had to do very much the majority of the parenting fell to my mum. You know, it would be, and I'm not talking like 60%, I'm probably more, you know, closer to 80% really, because my father was secretary of Richmond Football Club during that period of time, and they were big jobs, and football was everyone says it's big now, but it was always big, but it was actually bigger for those guys at that time because the players were part time, and so therefore my father's day would basically restart at the end of the day, so he'd have a normal working day then you know, the coaches and the players would all arrive at, you know, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and he wouldn't get home till 8 most nights. And he had a huge influence on my life because of, you know, I love the game, and we almost communicated through the game in some ways. And my mother took the brunt of the parenting, and there was three kids. And she was a very strong figure in our lives, no doubt. And she also worked as well. So we had, and that was a little bit unusual, you know, during that time. And so so she was probably particularly early, very much the strong-willed, high expectations of us, not in regard to do your homework type expectations, but just on our personal behaviours and how we treated each other and those sorts of things. And obviously my father and I end up with very strong relationships with my brother and sister, which has been a great thing in life. And probably I attribute that very much to the way that we grew up, which was classic suburban Melbourne at that time, but with an expectation that we did care for each other, that we did look out for each other. And we've managed to do that, you know, now very much into our adult lives and in the lives of each of our kids as well.
I was going to ask that. Do you think you've taken those learnings and in some way passed those on to your children as well?
You'd like to think so. I think we had a wonderful but complex childhood, would be how I'd describe it. It was anything, you know, people knew who I was before I had to introduce myself in many ways because I had a really, very well-known surname. And so there's part of our own identity. You know, I was young Schwabby from the age of seven type stuff. And then I ended up working in the game as well. So forging our own identity was always going to be a little bit more challenging. So we had a complex. And then my parents separated when I was in my early teens. And that was an unusual thing in those days. And in many ways, it was probably a good effort that they lasted as long as they did in some ways. So then having had the complexity of that in the background certainly played a role in our own lives. But what we've ended up is the three of us have all had, you know, really interesting, productive, positive lives, and we've all got wonderful children. And so and it all sort of was all spawned from a little house in Mount Waverley in the 1970s. So it was 60s and 70s. So I look at you know what they did as very young parents. With a great sense of admiration and a deep love, and you know my mum was also my mum not so much when we were kids, but she became a painter, as well. So she's an artist, and that obviously then her that part of her evolving and emerging is I end up being a football administrator who's an artist, and
it's a pretty cool combination.
So that would actually indicate that perhaps my parents had a fair role in all of that, given that's effectively what they were.
Sure.
Yeah. So I'd say our childhood, whilst loving and caring and all of those things, was always complicated. And as you get older, you have much more context to reflect on that complexity. That it was, they were still trying to grow up themselves whilst having children themselves. My mum was, she probably spent her life being, 10 years younger than all the other mums, and just even that fact alone would have just added layers to their existence. And having to get on with their lives and work life out at such a young age would have been very, very challenging.
Would have had an impact on their relationships and their different circles, I'm sure.
Yeah, no doubt. And Dad was a really well-known guy, very young as well. So, and Richmond at that era were the power club. They were the big strong club, and he was the CEO basically. So there was a lot of ego. There was a lot of other stuff going on. It was colourful. It was colourful. But it was always going to make for an unusual, parenting scenario, of which we managed to survive and do well. And my mum's still going strong and has lived very much her own life as well since that time. And she's a very strong and powerful influence on the lives of her three kids. But also recognises that. And recognise, I think, that we have to find our own way as well. So I think there was always a good balance from that perspective. She hasn't sought to dictate to us ever since we've had this independence. But there's not many major decisions that I've made in life where I haven't given my mum a call and just say, well, this is what I'm thinking of doing, I just want to let you know this is the way I'm going to go, even as even in my 40s and 50s.
We are proud to have BeyondRes supporting this podcast. BeyondRes are fast becoming Australia's leading float tank specialist. Floating is proving to be great for anyone wanting to perform better, enter states of creativity more often, or simply just want to relax. This becomes even more important as a parent. BeyondRes are currently running a competition for a free 1-hour float session. To find out how to enter, head to our socials.
I'm interested in what you just mentioned about your mum having, I suppose, other pursuits and other roles in her life, and it sounds like she was active in pursuing those as well.
Very much. Yeah.
It does interest me a lot because I feel like it's key in parenting, but I think it's across life that when someone fully identifies with a certain role, i.e. being a mum or a dad, for example, it can have a neglecting effect on other parts of their life. So whether that's relationships of all type, career, their well-being, what's your thoughts on that whole space?
Oh, I think ambitious people have a go at all of them, don't they? You want to be. There's a wonderful book which is Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, and he's a Holocaust survivor and then becomes a very influential, probably say psychiatrist. And he talks about meaning in the context of the work we do, the people we love, and the courage we show. There is three takes on. And I'm very much simplifying his thoughts.
And parenting,
parenting provides you with all three, really, doesn't it? So it's going to be, there is work associated with it, and that does relate obviously to the love. But why give up one for the other? And that might mean that one of them reduces in other ways. That they're going to be periods of your life where where parenting is going to exact more from you than what ideally you need from it. And then the same way your work will, either way, there's going to be courage, you know, associated with that, because you can actually pretend that that's not happening, and you can focus on just the one thing. You know, you give up your work for your parenting for your work. Well, there's no courage in that. And I can say, you know, in all sincerity, that was a, you know, there were times where I was deeply conflicted and felt that I just allowed the situation to take over rather than actually confronted in the way that really was required of me. So there was a lack of courage associated with that. And so hopefully you then learn from that and you manage to do that better next time, because every so often you get away with it, but you don't get away with it for very long. And that's why, even say from mum's point of view, where she became an artist later in life, but she also joined the workforce because she was 16 and had with kids. It didn't work when you were 16 and kids back in the day. And so she had to redefine herself, firstly as a someone who was re-entering the workforce, someone who, you know, as an artist, and she ended up having exhibitions. So she was a successful artist. In an external way, she was always a successful artist in our eyes, because we saw the beautiful work that she did, but she actually put it out there in the form of exhibitions and sold her work. And then, but also her courage to deal with what, you know, the breakup of the family, of which we stayed with mum. And so she became effectively a single parent at that stage of her life. So there, and she was probably still only, you know, she was only in her late 30s when all that happens. So these are big things to happen to you. And, you know, the gift is now that we have those reflections and we can, you know, we can now have conversations with her that perhaps we wouldn't have, you know, had we not have had the openness and the skills that she probably taught us, that were always to have your own take on the world, have your own views. What do you think? And that was overwhelmingly, that was a core part of her parenting, that there was an expectation that we would think independently of, you know, whatever the noise was at the time. You have your own take. You know, the newspapers might be saying one thing, but that doesn't necessarily make them right. Or, you know, your friends might tell you one thing, but that doesn't necessarily. She'd often say, you know, if I opened a conversation with they, you know, they reckon, or they said, or they, she'd go, who's they? Now tell me exactly who they is. It was really, I can recall it as vividly. And it's not an unusual thing to say, they, who's the they? And that got me then thinking, I go, who is the they? You know, who is it the loudest voice in the class? Is it just the prevailing view, because it's too hard to actually have a take which is independent of that view, or you would be bullied for having a different take? And if you think about that as a statement, and you think about that in the context of then having, say, a circumstance where you have a child change gender, well, the prevailing view of my childhood was that was obscene. You know, that
sure
should never happen.
A lot of people could relate to that, maybe initial view as well, possibly.
Yeah, and so whereas her encouraging an independent view of my generation then makes it possible for this generation to make that choice. Well, it probably wasn't possible for my generation. You know, there might have been. I went to a boys' school. There might have been kids at school who had the same, you know, view that they'd been born in the wrong body. But they would have never been able to do that, because they, the prevailing they of that era, was such a powerful force. Whereas having just more and more independent thinkers as time went on, but it's also recognised we do have to operate in communities and we do have to support each other and all that sort of stuff. But I haven't thought about that for about 30 years since this. So that what you've just opened up for me is really interesting take, is if you ask me to answer that question again about what my mum gave me, it was that she'd always say, tell me who they is.
It's interesting that stuck with you.
And I just come back then. But it's powerful, isn't it?
It is.
Because my brother's been very much that. My sister's been that. My brother's now CEO of the Global Sports Union operating out of Switzerland, and you know, would often have to go against prevailing views. You know, I'm really proud of the role that I was able to play in terms of women football, because it came out of the Melbourne Football Club in the time that I was there, where we basically went against a prevailing view that, you know, that no one's interested in women playing the game. Women are interested in women playing the game. Isn't that enough? You know,
totally.
So you have, you know, the rest of us have just got to catch up. That's all we're doing, because there's been some unbelievably courageous women who have continued to play the sport and support the sport without any form of encouragement whatsoever. In fact, a lot of discouragement.
Well, nothing's fixed and permanent, in my opinion as well. And I think that forms the basis of that open mind that you're expressing, from my opinion as well, just through what you're saying, whether it's through women's football, whether it's the impact that your mum's views have had on you. I think it's an awesome way to be, and that's probably the key part. It's not being explicit, and I think we can take that into a parenting context too with our kids, whatever stage it may be, is just being able to be with them, being able to share our views, but like you said, making it clear that they are allowed to have their own views and think differently and challenge the status quo as well. I find that really interesting.
Yeah. What it reminds me of is, I think it's great that you listen to your kids. I think that's really powerful. And that's sometimes hard to do. I get that. But it's not just the listening which is important. It's actually the questions you might ask them in regard to what they're telling you as well. And the term I use is, and so I think of my father as much as anything. I mean, because I then worked in football, so a lot of the conversations we would then have, and I now, when I speak of him, I now talk of him as a skilled interrupter. He would, if I was saying something, he would listen and nod and hear me, but he'd always have a question for me as well. And the question was always, the intent of the question, whether it actually achieved this, because I might have been too pig-headed to actually achieve it, but I know what his intention was to get me to think more deeply about whatever the stuff I was dealing with was. So the term is a skilled interrupter. So he'd often ask a question of a question, you know. So if I asked my father a question, he'd answer it with a question, which for me was bloody frustrating at the time, because all I wanted to do is get the answer and move on. But really what he was doing was teaching me to think for myself, even in my adult world where I felt that I was many times I felt overwhelmed by the work that I was doing, and I just wanted him to help me. But his way of helping me was actually getting me to help myself. But really I wasn't in many ways up for that. I wanted him just to say, do this, Cameron, and you'll be fine. But that rarely happened.
It sounds like that consistency of him following up with those questions has left you in a position of being able to possibly detach from those situations of overwhelm and coping with stress. Is that something that you felt as well through your journey in work and life?
Yeah, no, dear. I had to work it out for myself. But perhaps, you know, all of those things, to have your own independent thinking and to be a learner, I think that was probably the other aspect of it. If anything else now, I know that my kids, and I'd say my brother and sister and their kids, I would say, so the generations of them have been quite self-directed in regard to how they go about learning. And that's by forging their own pathways into doing the courses they want to do. And an example would be Chrissy gets into law but ends up being a graphic designer. So whereas there's an enormous attraction about, you know, leaving school and going and doing a law degree. There's a lot of ego and a lot of other things involved, but she had the courage relatively early in the piece to say this is not me, and then had a couple of goes at other things to find out which bit it was, and building on her own learning with each go at whatever she tried, and then landing in a place and realizing, you know, at least for this period of my life, this is my place. You know, that, you know, leave that open for change. And so the independence of thinking and young people who are prepared to take responsibility for their own development, and by definition that means being searchers and learners and drawing in knowledge and then working out how they can use that knowledge and in regard to what they want to do, that there's an application of that knowledge, would be probably the best inheritance, if you like, that we got from our parents. And it might also be that my father was in learning environments, like sporting clubs are very much learning environments. You know, they, you know, we bring young people in and we try to develop them and coach them and make them better. So he was having that experience at the same time. And I never got to have that conversation with him, but I would have enjoyed having that conversation. Did the fact that you were, you know, spending time with families of young players, recruiting their sons into your football club, then hoping that your football club was then good enough to develop them to whatever level of their development. Did that play a role in the way that you sought to parent your three kids? And because I think it had an impact on me, you know, having, you know, I had the situation where, you know, my own kids were 16, 17, 18 at the same time as I had young footballers coming in at 16, 17 and 18 and knowing enough about, you know, what was going on for them to play a role with my own parenting.
You're another parent in that situation, aren't you, in a lot of ways?
Yeah, you are. And it's been in a far more transactional way.
Yeah.
As much as you want to care for them forever, the game's the player wearing Guernsey number 4 for Richmond, Dustin Martin's a wonderful player, but someone else is going to wear number 4 one day. You know, that's you know, and you know, the same way as when I was a child, number 4 was Royce Hart, and he was my childhood hero. Now it's Dustin, so that, and Royce Hart's now in his 70s. You know, so it's very much, there is a lot of care associated with it, and you would have experienced that yourself. But at the same time, it moves on without you. And that was something I had to work out myself in my 50s. And in some ways, that's what took me to art school.
If you could transport back and provide one piece of parenting advice to your pre-parent self, what would it be?
One piece of advice. Enjoy the small moments, you know. I think we're always worried as parents about the big rocks, you know, where they're going to go to school, you know, can they read, can they write, can they, you know, all the sort of the big rocks, if you like. But it's the sort of the sand and the mortar and all that sort of stuff between the big rocks, which is going to hold it all together. And that's the little moments, that's the little times, you know, as I mentioned before, the kids playing on their own or doing their own thing, or just when they form the sorts of friends, when you realise your kids can form the sorts of friendships which can sustain them. And I think that's the stuff it would be not necessarily I'd do this differently, because clearly you would, because you've never had the experience of having done it. It's more about, you know, my own personal reflections on parenting that I think I, in some ways, because I was so worried about the big rocks that I might have not allowed myself to enjoy really what parenting is, which is just those little pieces, the thousand little pieces that make up the whole journey.
That's awesome. I appreciate you opening up and sharing.
No worries.
Going back to something you said at the start around really enjoying seeing your children, I suppose, find joy out of just drawing on napkins and just dive into that creative space. These days, it's probably a generalization that there's less of that because of technology.
Yeah.
What's your personal opinion on kids using technology these days and where it's potentially going?
I think, yeah, I get the danger that it can just be an obvious distraction and can just draw them into wasting their time. I understand that. I think the biggest danger in the technology is that it can reinforce a one view world, just because the technology, the algorithms, the whatever it might be, if you're of a certain view, it fills your feed up with whatever that feed is, whether it's Insta, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Facebook, it fills your feed up with the stuff that it knows you like. And the experience I've had is that the real learning sometimes is the exposure to the things that I had no idea existed. And so it might just bring them into a much more one-dimensional world where they say that their only happiness can be through one thing. And in doing so, then they set up incredible expectations of themselves. And that can be as basic as also how they look as well, or how they feel, because there's not many people are filling their feeds up with their dark moments. You know, you don't put your unhappy moments on Instagram. You know, people put their happiest moments, you know, and generally through the filter of something as well. So that would be it. And so what I would hope that my kids are learnt and are learning is that the most powerful learning is often in our silences. You know, that it's the ability to reflect, whether that's through, and creativity obviously provides you with that, but that's how you retain your attention by being creative, how you actually stay in the moment when you're doing it, rather than, you know, flicking on Twitter every 2 minutes or something like that, is that you actually do it in a way where you can actually find your own space to actually develop your own views and have your own take and pursue your own goals. And in the meantime, you'll be doing that with something or someone else anyway, you would hope. If that's, say, you in the context of a sporting organisation, it's Chrissy working with an organisation, to design things beautifully for the benefit of whatever purpose that it has, or, you know, Evie doing it in, through game design, you know, which is hopefully something which, you know, then evokes the passions of all of them. And it's interesting that both of my kids are actually going to work in, because Chrissy's all about, her stuff's all about user experience. So it's actually online, it's digital, you know, and Evie's gaming, it's online, it's digital. That's the reality of their worlds.
Mm.
So, you know, I generate my business through LinkedIn. That's the reality of my world. But it has an unbelievably powerful medium, but like anything, it's not going to be the answer for you. You have to find your own answers, your own way in regard to that.
The ongoing challenge of being able to create space between that world, which is necessary, like you just mentioned with those examples these days, but also being able to find that time to, I suppose, detach from that digital stimulation, which is so apparent now as well. Just starting to wrap up. Just wary of taking up too much of your time, Cam. I really appreciate you coming on to chat. Just the last couple of questions. Have you read, watched, listened to anything that stands out as something that's helped you as a parent?
A thousand things. I think anything which actually helps develop you and your worldview will impact on your parenting. So the book I mentioned before, Man's Search for Meaning, that's in its own way has had a profound effect on me, because it's actually how you then help and your kids find their version of that. You know, how do you do that? So that would be, I would have that right up the very top of my, if I was to give one book to a person, it would be a book by Ernest Hemingway, Old Man and the Sea would be one, which is it ends up with an older man on a boat, and his relationship with a kid in his fishing village. And it was written a long, long time ago. It's only 100 pages. And I remember reading the book because I was asked to read the book at school. and I read it through certain contexts, and I think it was one of the first books which had a profound effect on me as a probably in my early teenage years. And then I remember I was on the place I used to stay regularly during my 20s. The book was on the bookshelf there, and I set myself to read it each holiday break because I found myself in the same place. And every year I read the book, it changed a little bit because I was changing, including during that period becoming a parent. And then I read it recently in my 50s, and the book seemed to have changed again. You know, that's because my context had changed all the way through.
How cool is that? That difference in interpretation through different times.
Yeah, so I probably read it as the boy the first time, and then I read it as the old man at the end. And there's actually a fish in it as well, where he catches this big marlin. And I reckon at different times I felt like the fish as well. So it's just interesting that, you know, that how it is. And you can never underestimate where your learning is actually going to come from. So the books I've recommended are probably the timeless ones, but there's so much great information available now. It's then actually how you go about processing that information. So even anyone who's listening to this podcast, do they take the, you know, the 5 minutes at the end of the podcast just to write down the two or three things that they maybe got from it, or do they allow that just to go into the wash of information that they're going to absorb in the day? So if you just take a few minutes and just write down, gee, I like that, or I'm going to read that book, I'm going to look that up, or I'm going to listen to this podcast again, or I'm going to go back and listen to previous episodes, whatever it might be, that way of which we drive our own learning is, so you then become what I'd call, you're listening to the podcast because you're curious, but then you're going to sort of collect and curate the knowledge that you gained from it in a way which hopefully then has really good meaning for you.
Simply being able to reflect, like what you just said resonated in a big way. And it's one of the several reasons why I wanted to launch this project, was potentially for some people out there that do align with it to be able to use it as that weekly time to reflect on their weeks as a parent, and maybe their journey as a whole as a parent, which is something I've really, really enjoyed diving into with yourself too, Cam. So yeah, again, I appreciate it. And just to finish off with a segment we call Plug It Off, it's basically an opportunity for yourself, if you're open to it, to share how listeners and parents out there maybe will want to get in touch with you, just in terms of something you've said or something they want to ask about, or potentially something to do with business as well. So where can they find you and reach out?
Yeah, well, my business is called Design CEO. So it's just Design CEO, the two words put together. And really, it probably is a product of the full lived experience. So I think there's the reflections of being in elite sporting world for 30 years, then even as an artist, and definitely, as you can probably sense from this conversation, my experience as a parent are all now play into a role as to how I now help and educate people and organisations as to how they find, you know, the deeper part of themselves in regard to it. And it's not in a way which is so esoteric that they never get to find it, but it's more about the system of doing that. You know, I'm a great believer that we don't rise to the level of our ambition. Whilst it's important we've got goals, we fall to the level of our systems. And so what are the processes in your life which actually make this happen? And that's both for leaders in the role they're playing as leaders, it's for the teams that they're leading, and also the organisations which they're hopefully trying to create that type of environment for. So that's the work I do, and it's just at designco.com.au. You can just contact me there or via LinkedIn, or you know, there's a good thing about the digital world now is you can always find people, but probably LinkedIn's the most direct way. I think that's how you found me, wasn't it? From memory?
Yeah, it was. And really enjoy what Design CEO are doing, and just what I've learned from yourself in terms of LinkedIn. I think it's a great platform for that as well. And I tell you what, just what you started talking about, I think could potentially be another rabbit hole we could dive into in terms of the correlation between parenting and leadership. So it'd be great to get you back on maybe at some stage to talk a bit more about that too.
No worries.
Awesome, Cam. Thanks for giving up your time, mate. And yeah, we'll chat soon.
All right. Good on you. Well done on the work you're doing. Good on you, Sean.
Cheers, mate. Bye. Thank you for listening.
Personally, these interviews are providing time to reflect on my week as a parent. Let me know if anything stood out for you during the chat. As the new pod on the block, it would be great if you could look out for us and share this episode with someone you think who may be interested. While you're at it, why not head to our socials and show some love with a like or comment. Keep an eye out for the next pod drop. Big thanks to Stilo Media for producing this piece of art we call Sounding Board Parenting. From my heart to yours, I hope you are making progress on something you love and makes you feel alive. Remember, this can go anywhere.